Finally.
Hear ye! Hear ye! The Colts in session. The Colts in session. Now, here come the judge. Here come the judge.
Here come the judge.
After months of heated speculation and a tension-building finale, the Supreme Court declared that Obamacare is constitutional mostly. I've been playing this one too much lately, don't you think? I mean, the Supreme Court has too much influence on our lives and on the news cycle. But I want to thank the justices for waiting until I woke up this morning, about 7 o'clock Pacific time, flipped on the tube, and watched the news as it rolled out. And the surprises? Well, I frankly was surprised that the court found the mandate that one must buy health insurance to be constitutional. And I was surprised that it's Chief Justice Roberts who joined the liberals on the court to uphold what's called Obamacare, and that he twisted, once again, in the activist and arrogant style that his court is known for, he took an argument and flipped it. Because as it was cobbled together and passed and afterward in its defense, Democrats, including the president, said that the mandate that requires you to pay a penalty if you don't buy health insurance is not a tax. And the claim was that this was constitutional under the Commerce Clause. And Chief Justice Roberts said, no, it is a tax, and that's okay. And now that flip has already been blamed on President Obama. Now, let me pause for a moment to remind you, in case you're not a regular listener, this is not a victory for me. And you'll hear me in some ways relieved that the Democrats and Obama didn't lose in a major way in this case. That's a political comment. But on the policy level, I don't support this package. Sure, there are some benefits, the pre-existing condition ban, the extension of child policies to age 26. There are good things in this package. But it fundamentally commits every American to the for-profit insurance company for the foreseeable future and maybe beyond. And that is the fundamental flaw here. I'm a single-payer guy. Medicare works. Medicare needs more money. Medicare needs to pay doctors more. But Medicare delivers health care services with an overhead of less than 5%. And the for-profit guys deliver it with an overhead of 30%. There should be no profit-taking in the delivery of health care. That's my fundamental position. But they're not listening to me. And it was clear from the get-go that Obama would not entertain single-payer. Even the wimpy public option was dangled and then removed. He made a deal with the pharmaceutical companies to preserve their profits. And he enabled corporate America to claim that this is a victory. Well, it is. The insurance sector is dancing today. Because 30 to 40 million people will be forced to become their new customers. And so I'm relieved that this is behind us, but of course it isn't, because John Boehner and Mitch McConnell are using the R word. They're going to move to repeal this package. And they'll get the votes in the House, and they'll have an issue teed up for the fall campaign. And one of the fundamental errors in analysis that is made by the opponents of this bill and by most media commentators is that the polls show that it's unpopular. Well, that is really an improper interpretation of the polls. Because people like me who respond to a pollster, I don't support Obamacare, they don't weigh in about why. I don't support it because it empowered for-profit insurance companies and it doesn't allow me to choose a single-payer option or to move everybody into a single-payer program. And I haven't seen the latest polls and how they break down on the various people who oppose Obamacare. But a year ago, when I did study a poll, it showed that roughly 30% of the people who say they're opposed to so-called Obamacare are the conservatives who just consider it socialism. They're not well-informed, but that's what they call it. And they're opposed to it because Obama's for it. That's the bottom line there. But somewhere around 35 or 40% of the people who are opposed to this package are like me. They wanted to see a real effort to control health care costs, not just expand health insurance coverage without any cost controls. And so, sure, it's a fine thing that they can no longer deny you coverage due to pre-existing conditions. But can you afford the coverage you're entitled to? That's a question that many people already know the answer to. Others will find out, and that answer is a negative one. So, to the ruling itself, there are some interesting analyses already available, and I've got more work to do on this myself, but it's only been, 4.5 hours since the Supreme Court issued its ruling. And Ezra Klein at the Washington Post has an interesting take on Chief Justice Roberts. And he said that while technically he delivered a victory short-term to Obama and the Democrats, that on every major issue, he sided with the conservatives, except on the mandate. And here's a telling description. It's as if an umpire tweaked the rules to favor his team in the future, but obscured the changes by calling a particular contest for the other side. Here's a comment attributed to Eric Erickson of Red State. John Roberts is playing at a different game than the rest of us. We're on poker. He's on chess. By voting with the liberals to uphold the Affordable Care Act, Roberts has put himself above partisan reproach. Well, I don't quite believe that, but that's the claim here. I'll continue. No one can accuse Roberts of ruling as a movement conservative. Ooh, I'm not sure about that, Ezra. He's made himself bulletproof against insinuations that he's animated by party allegiances. Well, I don't buy that for a minute, but I think he has surprised people by being not only the one who joined the four so-called liberals on the court for the five-person majority, but he assigned himself the duty to write the opinion. And in doing so, as I mentioned earlier, he flipped the penalty that one pays for not having health insurance, called it a tax, and said on that basis it's okay. And in doing that, did he provide fodder for Republicans to attack Obama as a flipper? Because Obama did deny that it was a tax. That was the Democratic position. And their fear was that the court would overturn it because it was a tax. So I do have to say that Roberts is confounding in some respects here. And that, as I told you, I'm surprised that he led the charge to, at least nominally, uphold the constitutionality of this expansive bill. The one part that was declared unconstitutional makes some sense to me, and that is telling states that they must provide coverage for people under Medicaid does appear to be an unfunded mandate. And while in his oral presentation, I believe the Chief Justice referred to it as a gun to the head of the states, I can understand that imposing these requirements without providing the money is an onerous act by the federal government. And I've seen it play out in other places, sometimes where it is a real burden on the states, and other times where the states just use the claim of an unfunded mandate to try to wiggle out of laws or responsibilities that they simply don't want to embrace. And I do believe that this overturning of the Medicaid part is going to allow states, and forgive me if you live in Mississippi, but states like Mississippi to say, well, we're going to let our old people die. We don't want to raise taxes in order to provide Medicaid or that kind of coverage for them. And so that really plays into the kind of heartlessness that I associate with the Roberts Court. Now, there are a couple of other angles here that I would like to mention to you. Let's go to the far right. I am on the mailing list of the American Center for Law and Justice. This was started by Pat Robertson. It is fronted by a guy named Jay Sekulow, and he's got kids who are lawyers who went to Regent or Liberty University and are part of this whole new young right-wing cadre. Here's the email that came in from ACLJ. It says, we represented more than 100 members of Congress and 145,000 Americans in challenging Obamacare before the Supreme Court. Today's decision is extremely disappointing. Now, here comes a string of lies. With this decision, the mandate to buy health insurance that covers abortion stands. The abortion surcharge stands. The abortion pill mandate that violates religious liberty still stands. But we will not stand idly by and let this happen. Now, it leads into a fundraising pitch. That's how principled these people are. But these are out-and-out lies coming from self-described Christians. And why would Christians tell lies in an effort to deny health care to a fellow citizen? Do unto others before they do it to you? And it's just a crock to say that health insurance that covers abortion stands. It's explicit. This health care package does nothing to change the Hyde Amendment that federal funds cannot be used to pay for abortions. The abortion pill, that's bogus. It's not an abortion pill. It doesn't cause an abortion. It's a day-after pill that is essentially a big shot of estrogen, as I understand it, that prevents an egg from implanting on the wall of the uterus. And they want to call anything like that abortion. I mean, next they're going to tell us that Trojans are abortion. And so the out-and-out lies, I want to call it dissembling or disingenuousness. No, these are intentional falsehoods that are being used to promote a political point of view to nominally religious people. And, of course, they don't pipe up, so it's the responsibility of somebody like me to do so. Here's one more from the right, and I don't know much about this group, but they have my email address. And, by the way, my email inbox is just loaded with spun reaction to the Supreme Court decision today. This is a group called Independent Women's Voice. Their tagline is "A Voice for the Mainstream." See if you agree after you hear this. They cite a director of communications, but it doesn't say who the principals are. Oh, here we go. President and CEO Heather R. Higgins of Independent Women's Voice, creators of the Obamacare Repeal Pledge and founder of the Inside Outside Repeal Coalition, released this statement. And they spin it up as a victory for Republicans. They say the Supreme Court just handed the Republican Party the greatest political gift for the upcoming election on two fronts. The first is a revived awareness among the electorate of the urgency that they choose senators and representatives committed to the full repeal of Obamacare. And once it is repealed, we'll get down to the hard work of genuine reform of our health care. Yeah, right. The second issue is a commitment to picking a president who will choose justices who believe that part of the purpose of the Constitution is to impose limits on the role of the government and who will respect the Constitution's limitations. Well, I guess you better put Chief Justice Roberts, corporation's best friend, in the sights of the right wing. Now, here is a voice I respect. John Stauber, the activist from Madison, Wisconsin. He founded the Center for Media and Democracy, retired from there a couple of years ago. And he is an outspoken single-payer advocate. So let's hear his remarks here. It was a brilliant move by a far-right but oh-so-likable Chief Justice Roberts to side with the Democratic-appointed justices and uphold Obamacare. After all, this is a massive victory for corporate power, forcing citizens to buy an expensive insurance product that won't serve our needs very well, but will profit industry in lieu of receiving real health care. Obamacare and its corporate mandate were born on the right, as in Heritage Foundation, as a way to destroy the political prospects of any single-payer system that would cover all Americans with a tax-funded system of guaranteed medical care. This is the way all other industrial societies protect the right to health care, by taking it out of the hands of the giant insurance industry. The right to health care is like the right not to be enslaved. There are no half measures, and the insurance industry is the slave master. Roberts may have brilliantly scored a fourfer. One, he now has an interesting historic legacy. Two, he and his Democratic-appointed colleagues have given huge new powers to corporations and further reduced the rights of citizens. Three, any real reform, call it single-payer or Medicare for all, is doomed in bipartisan fashion. The pragmatists who are for Obamacare are duped if they think it is going to be expanded to single-payer. From this point on, it will only be picked over and further reinvented to empower the insurance and drug industries. And number four, Roberts siding with Democrats has probably bounced Obama right out of office. The public overwhelmingly hates Obamacare, and this pours gas on the electoral fire. Well, again, John, I have to parse the opposition to Obamacare, and I don't think that people who support single-payer are going to throw Obama out, somehow imagining that Mitt Romney, who is pledging to repeal it all on the first day, would somehow replace it with something even marginally better. So while I respect John Stauber, I can't fully agree with him, but I think his point of view deserves to be heard. In a cartoon today that came from the Los Angeles Times related to the Supreme Court, it's based on the premise, if Justice Antonin Scalia and Rush Limbaugh traded jobs, would anyone notice? And it shows Scalia in a golf shirt behind a microphone, and in the second panel it shows Limbaugh sitting next to Justice Kennedy, rarely seen in a coat and tie. And the bubble with the dialogue is pointed at both Scalia, the radio host, and Limbaugh, the Supreme Court justice. And they share the comment, Arizona's immigration law is fine. It's Obama's policy that is mind-boggling. Well, I enjoyed that. And if you can find it online somewhere, it's a little better when you see it with the artwork. And fortunately, we get now to relax and have no more SCOTUS news for a while. The one other decision they released today was that your First Amendment right enables you to tell lies about your military heroism. Yes, even someone who never served can put on a uniform and pretend. And I honestly think they did the right thing there. I don't think that it is an issue that is worthy of criminalization. It doesn't happen very often. Meanwhile, over in the House of Representatives, as they try to wrap up and head home for a long holiday break, they voted 255-67 to hold Attorney General Eric H. Holder Jr. in contempt of Congress. This is for withholding documents in the Fast and Furious case, and the more you learn about it, the more you see what a concoction this is. Now, I'm not a defender of Eric Holder. I have great contempt for him, as you know. And I won't bore you with a repetition of all those issues again right now. But this is a farce. And it is driven. And as investigative coverage surfaces from the dangerous left-leaning publication Fortune Magazine, we learn that the real motivation behind this is a bunch of gun nuts believe that Fast and Furious was set up to fail so that there would be some huge massacre that could then lead to a backlash that would permit Obama to pass new restrictions on gun rights. And Obama hasn't lifted a finger to rein in gun rights in this country. He's not likely to do so anytime soon. But that's the fiction that is driving this whole effort. And so we'll see where it goes from here. But I think it's kind of sad to see the Republicans. And here is John Boehner in between tanning sessions and tear-jerking moments. He said, the House is focused on jobs and the economy, but no Justice Department is above the law and no justice department is above the Constitution, which each of us has sworn an oath to uphold. Ah, the hypocrisy is so incredible. And finally today, two items related to civil liberties. A disturbing development: the moderate mayor of San Francisco, Ed Lee, who was plucked out of oblivion and installed by former Mayor Gavin Newsom as he was leaving for an empty job in Sacramento, Ed Lee is embracing the failed policy of billionaire Mayor Mike Bloomberg in New York and proposing that San Francisco adopt a stop-and-frisk law. Now, in New York and in Philadelphia, studies have been conducted, and in New York alone, 88% of almost 700,000 people who were stopped and frisked last year had done nothing wrong. And you know that a stop-and-frisk law is an opportunity for racial profiling. Because, as one person points out from a black neighborhood in San Francisco, if a white guy drives through there, cops aren't going to stop him and frisk him. But if you're caught driving while black in that neighborhood or anywhere else, the practices could be very different. I'll keep you posted on this, and we will certainly vigorously oppose any effort of San Francisco to model the bad policies from New York and other cities. And kudos to Berkeley. The People's Republic is working through some legislation which would order its police department not to cooperate with the FBI, the Joint Terrorism Task Force, and Homeland Security's coordinating group. And this is something I strongly support, and it is advanced by the great group called BORDC, the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, and its executive director, Shahid Buttar. And I commend them for this effort, because what we've seen is that since 9/11, Homeland Security and the FBI and this group called the Northern California Regional Intelligence Center, which is the coordinating group I referred to, they basically try to erode local standards that protect civil liberties by saying, well, if the federal government says it's okay to tap somebody's phone or to secretly put a GPS tracker on their car without a warrant, then you should get out of the way, local law enforcement, and just let us do it. And in San Francisco, there was an effort to require the police department to publish any agreements they have with the FBI or other federal agencies, but it did not pass into law. And so I'm very concerned about the creeping collusion between state and local authorities with the federal government. And I'm also concerned about the implications on our constitutional rights. So I'm grateful to BORDC for taking up that issue and for Berkeley being such a forward-looking community. Thanks for joining me today. I hope you feel more healthy. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until